with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. A little more than a minute past the hour on this Friday, the 20th day of November, 2015. Not February, but November. And the 20th, not the 13th or the 29th, but the 20th of November, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go, well, to help us keep all of this on the air. Ordinarily, I would say to keep, if you want to go to the chat room, but we are we've descended upon the Mike Malloy chat room for the time being because of Java troubles with our own chat room. So if you want to jump into the chat, run over to MikeMalloy.com, click on the link, as I am doing even as we speak, that says Truth Seeker Chat Room. Yay. And you'll be in amongst the merry band of the multimedia extravaganza that is the live program chat. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Greg. Moderator Greg. Good evening, iPie. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie. Good evening, Sparky, and good evening to Texas Betsy. At some point in time, we probably need to make Sparky a mod, being as how he is one. Yeah. Let's see. Is that everybody? Yep, that's everybody. You can come by, too, if you want to. It's the same thing. If you've never been there before, just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and bang, you'll be chatting merrily away and hopefully enjoying it. Absolutely. Also, and I'll note, we are at the end of the week, and we are trying to raise our usual $200 this evening. That's to keep all of this going. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 6 1/4. Yeah, I think so. me and the ciphering, right? But remember, through the end of this evening, and this is pretty important, there is a challenge on the table, courtesy of our good friend Tony in Chico, who has offered to sponsor, what he's going to do is he's going to double the $10 contributions of the 10 people who sign on for brand new subscriptions this week. And thus far, we have six to go. We have six to go. And it would be wonderful if we got those six this evening as part of the $200 we needed to raise, okay? And if you do, like the other four, Tony will double your first month's subscription contribution. So your 10 will all become 20. And wouldn't that be wonderful? Yes. So thank you very kindly, Tony, for doing that. And hopefully there are six folks out there who will make that happen and join up with we're past the Frontier 50, and I don't know, what are we working, I can't come up with that alliterative stuff right now, it's just not happening for me, but And anyway, you slice it, in order to do the subscription, what you do is you go over to headonradionetwork.com, you click on contribute, you put your little dot and 10 bucks, and then you make this a recurring contribution, and you fill out all the fields there, and you absolutely do not have to tell us who you work for or what you do there. No, absolutely not. I mean, just because you work down at Floyd's Barbershop doesn't mean you have to tell us, right? Yes, exactly. So it's and so we've got that out of the way. All right, then. This is, of course, Friday on the Front Porch, which means that in about 55 minutes, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. We'll get you guys, we'll get everybody assembled and start discussing, those things that sort of want discussing. And I hate to pick up where, well, I don't hate to, but picking up where we left off last night, goodness me. How nasty are we as a country? I think it's a fair question. And at this point in time, I think it's an important question. How nasty are we? And why are we so nasty? Because the response to the Syrian refugee crisis is nothing if not vile. I thought we would start. And I've got a question. Every time some new gospel hustler wants to build a tongue-speaking sanctuary and herpetological eco-garden, snakes, right? Do they have a town hall meeting? Do they invite everybody to come and say, I think we got enough churches. I do. We plenty of churches we got here. I mean, if you can't get your soul saved at one of the ones we got, why do we need another one? Oh, dear God. Gerald, that looks a little bit frightening. Gerald says, it's Friday night. I've got a brand new bottle of booze and nothing to do. Looks like a good night to troll right-wing news sites. Big fun. Would that be rot gut tequila? What's the poison this evening, Gerald? But seriously, do we have a meeting every time we want to build a new church? Because I don't remember any. But it seems like whether it was the 9/11 mosque, and you got to say that with like the muscles in your neck straining because you're trying not to lose your mind, or let's see, the Islamic Center proposed for an area near Nash Vegas, they're going to build a mosque in Tennessee. The flag is a falling. Right? And we talked about that. What was his name? Glenn Cassaba Mellon? Quesada. That idiot. Quesada. Is that an old Muskogee word meaning, I've forgotten some of my Muskogee, but is that an old Muskogee word meaning...
You dick!
I'll bet it is. Mm-hmm. Now he wants to... stop Syrian refugees by any means necessary. Mm-hmm, right? Well, it turns out up in Virginia-stan, the Old Dominion, they had him a town hall meeting because the Islamic Center of Fredericksburg wants to build a mosque on property that they, the Islamic Center of Fredericksburg, have purchased. You see, they purchased this property because we have a system of government and a culture that says that human beings can actually own land. If you sit down and think about it, and you think about land versus the length of a human life, you kind of come to the conclusion that that might be pretty silly. But still, we hang on to the notion. Because capitalism. Because money. And we, and so since you can own land, and since you can accumulate money to purchase the land with, well, that's what the folks there at the Islamic Center of Fredericksburg have done. And they're gonna, they're gonna build them a mosque. And they're gonna go there, and they're gonna pray, and they're gonna talk about what their God tells them to do. You know, this would be the same great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky that tells Jews what to do and tells Christians what to do. And for the Christians, you know, it's Jesus' daddy. Don't start. But apparently, if you want to, if you own some land and you want to build a mosque on it, you have to have a town hall meeting. You can't just, get the dozers out there and start the dirt work and start into laying the drains and make it, no. Laying in, putting in that rebar and plumbing and stuff. No. Because that's what they do when they just want to build, a gas station that'll serve frozen pizza. You can do that and there's no town hall meeting. And nobody says, well, be damned. No. And if they want to build a brand new Baptist gospel sharp tabernacle, no town hall meeting and nobody going, I don't think so. Oh, but by God, if you're a Muslim in the new United States of Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God, amen. Well, you got to have a town hall meeting because that lets the booger eaters come to visit. Hello, booger eater. Yeah. Oh, this is just precious. It really is.
Every one of you are terrorists. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you think. You can smile at me. You can say whatever you want. But every Muslim is a terrorist. Period.
Right now.
Shut your mouth. Sorry. I don't want to hear your mouth.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you got that? He kind of sounds like what would have happened if the Chris Farley character who talked about living in a van down by the river had grown up. I mean, this guy's got a neck the size of my thigh. And I want to hear your mouth. You're all terrorists, every one of you Muslims. Jesus God. But that's who we've become. Hello, us. Aren't we special? Oh, aren't we? Because we have town hall, because we're not going to have, can't have any mosques. I mean, we got freedom of religion in this country, but it's just ask any of the freaks, it's freedom of the Christian religion. And your occasional synagogue, because, well, if we don't let them stay, then, you know, we can't call ourselves Judeo-Christian. You gotta have a little cooperation there somewhere, right? I don't know about you. I don't see this letting up anytime soon. Do you? And dude wasn't being shy, now was he? Him with his shaven head and his big old neck and you shut up! Isn't that lovely? Doesn't it just make you proud to be a Merkin? Bound to. And we can go on like this pretty much all evening. And I mean, I think I got 45 more minutes worth of this. Ah, yes, that would be Matt Foley, motivational speaker. That was the Chris Farley character. And you know, here's another one of those thingies to ponder, a puzzlement, if you will. Why do all of these mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking morons seem to look, like skinheads? Because they do. Let's check dude out again just for fun, shall we?
You are terrorists. Every one of you are terrorists. I don't care what you say. You don't mind what you do. You can smile at me. You can say whatever you want. But every Muslim is a terrorist. Period.
Right now.
Shut your mouth. I don't want to hear your mouth. I'm starting with you, sir. Everything that I will do, everything that I can do to keep you from doing what you're doing will happen. That will happen.
You got that? Oh, and in addition, just so you can set the scene and have the visual, he's got that big old skinhead, but he's got a big old bushy beard. He could be easily mistaken for a Muslim if he's not careful. Maybe he might want to shave. And he's got some sort of letters tattooed down his arm. And I don't know what he said he's going to do. We didn't get that part of the clip. But all Muslims are tourists. Even the little baby dead ones laying on the beach. Yeah. This is not playing well in Spotsylvania County, Virginia, by the way. Maybe there's some hope. Maybe. No guarantees. I wonder which Klan chapter dude there. But no, more importantly, I wonder which church he goes to.
Leaders who were shouted down with bigoted insults at a public meeting are now receiving an outpouring of support.
You are terrorists. Every one of you are terrorists. I don't care what you say.
In his video, you first saw on WUSA 9 at 11, and it has a lot of people talking tonight. Peggy Fox joins us now live in Spotsylvania with the follow-up to that story. Peg?
Well, Leslie, when people heard what was said and how it was said to their neighbors who've lived here for years, many people were disgusted. Many felt inspired to reach out to the leaders of the Islamic Center of Fredericksburg, who came under verbal and personal attack at a public meeting just because of their religion.
We have been getting emails, text messages. My phone is beeping all the time. People apologizing.
Letters like this have been pouring in, apologizing to the Muslim leaders in Spotsylvania for the behavior of several people at a public meeting Tuesday night.
We don't want to part to this. Right now, what we're looking at this. This is evil.
The Islamic Center of Fredericksburg has outgrown this building and wants to build a new mosque nearby on this piece of property that they own.
Along Andorra.
But as Samer Shalabi, a trustee of the Islamic Center, tried to explain the plans, a few people began shouting insults.
You can smile at me, you can say whatever you want, but every Muslim is a terrorist. Period.
Right now.
Shut your mouth. Yes, sir. I don't want to hear your mouth.
When the shouting would not stop, a sheriff's deputy broke up the meeting. Today's freelance star called for tempers to cool and said that misplaced anger from the Paris attacks is creating division desired by the terrorists.
I'm Jewish and a veteran. I'm appalled by the public opposition you received at your meeting.
The letters have lifted Shalabi's...
Yeah, see, there's only one problem. It's not the attacks in Paris that have engendered this. This is something vile and hateful that resides deep, deep in the essential nature of our country. We've always had someone to hate here. Irish need not apply. Don't let the sun set on you here. With each wave of immigrants from different areas, we've come up with new slurs. My God, if you're Italian, I can think of three different ones right offhand. Irish, I got at least two. We got one for the French. Got a couple for the Germans. One for Eastern Europeans and Hungarians, and maybe Slavs. And then there are the slurs that we reserved for the people that we kidnapped and forced to come here. Yeah. Then we got a nice half dozen or so for the people who were here before the white folks came here and stole everything. Yeah. And just generically across the Asian region, there's another good half dozen or so. It is in the American character to despise the different, to hate the other, to fear the different. And we will move heaven and earth to find the difference just so we can hate it. It gives me no joy to point this out. It gives me no pleasure to note it. Yes, I'm glad that people wrote in and said, you know, we're really ashamed of those couple of jerks. But by the same token, we've got a civil society, and, you know, we live and let live. I mean, you know, you got to let them fellers say what they're going to say, because we got our freedom of speech here. And if the only thing they can speak is hating, well, that's just freedom. You got that? Gerald didn't even see the video, and he's already got dude pegged. Yeah, those letters are probably Japanese and spell something like pickle or pencil. He thinks they spell courage or some dumb shit like that. Only God can judge me! You know, in a tattoo on the back of the neck. When it says right there, you know, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky reached down and said, no barbecue and no tattoos and no shrimp. And no polyester Dacron cotton blend shirts. Damn it. I will hate you forever for it. And I love you so much that I'll torture you for all eternity if you do any of those things. And women, shut up. Loving God. Really a loving God. And I know, because we've got his witness. There he is, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson. Unlike me, I ain't no senator's son. Well, Marion was. And he talks to Jesus every day. Uh-huh. And while a lot of people who have a general misunderstanding of your Christianity and think that when Jesus said, if you've done it unto the least of these my brothers, you've done it also unto me. And he was talking about, you know, his feeding the hungry and tending to visiting the sick and housing the homeless and clothing the naked and all of that. And if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. And now Marion knows better. Marion knows that Jesus, who looked a lot more like your average Syrian refugee than just about any white person, and certainly Marion Robertson, I am. Now, Marion says, no, Jesus, no, he's not going to get, sucked in by all that simpering, panty-waisted sympathy for people who don't have the courage to stand there and get blown up. Stay home.
This is Heather, who says, with the horrible ongoing ISIS attacks, I was wondering what you think Jesus would say about letting Syrian refugees into America. Is it more important to protect our country from evil or to try to reach out and save those who do not know him?
But compassionate. And if I see a family that is fleeing oppression, I would say, let's put our arms around them and help them. That's my own personal. But from a policy standpoint, the truth is, these evil people have infiltrated the refugee hordes and like.
Now, if they were white folks, I'll bet you they wouldn't be hordes. I'll bet you they would be people desperately in need of help. But no, they got special headgear that their God tells them they have to wear or else he won't love them anymore. So naturally, that's strange and unusual and scary. To former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson. Yeah. I mean, but Pat, he'd reach out and he'd do some loving. Hug somebody else, Marion, please. And by the way, I don't know who this woman was who wrote in. Her name is Heather, apparently. I'm still convinced that people have taken to writing to Marion just to punk him. Just for the fun of it. Let's let him have his say.
And if I see a family that is fleeing oppression, I would say, let's put our arms around them and help them. That's my own personal. But from a policy standpoint, the truth is, these evil people have infiltrated the refugee hordes, and like one of them up in Paris was a man who had come in through the Macedonian corridor up into Europe, and he was, I guess, Syrian. I don't know what he was, but nevertheless, he was one of those refugees. And
yeah, not Syrian.
He brought mayhem. So I do think a country's got to be vigilant, but my heart... My heart, you ask me, my heart is to help the poor. And if I saw a family that's fleeing the oppression and the war in Syria, I would open my heart and say, let's take them in. But policymakers may disagree. All right?
Hey, this is Richard who says, is it wrong to say, holy smokes? I hope not.
the Brits say... I'd bloody well do this, or I'd,
yeah, but that's supposed to be a bad word.
It is the blood of Christ. That's what...
Really?
Yes, that's what it means. And we have many...
Who segued this? I mean, this is the same video, okay? We've gone from you know, I'd help the refugees to... What? You bloody well right. You got a bloody right. I'm singing again. Damn it. Poor Gerald is chewing through the straps already. For fuck's sake, can former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson just look at an individual and tell if they're evil or not? Has the Almighty given him some sort of superpowers? Well, yes. But you got to remember, Gerald, the Almighty also periodically gets a giggle out of... if he existed, a giggle out of Punkin, the former liquor supply officer, because he tells him things like, Marion, I've got the skinny for you. This would be back about 2012. Marion, the winner of the 2000 presidential election is going to be Bishop Willard Romney.
Hey, Gabriel, I told him Romney's gonna win.
Yeah, right. Well, we're going to get the language lesson. We might as well finish it out. It doesn't like you saying things like bloody. So will you stop, gormless bunch?
Things, and, you know, holy smokes, it's just one way of talking. But gosh, golly, and these other things all come out of God. So, you know, it's really tough because in our slang and in our patois, if I could use that term.
Tish, that's French. Patois? Does he realize? Does he even know that that's the word we use for things that he says not to do? That former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson has issued a patois? Yeah.
We have all these terms. We don't realize the significance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we better be careful. We don't.
This is Christine, who says, there's no doubt that ISIS must be stopped, but we went into Iraq with shock and awe and left it a breeding ground for ISIS. How can we know that doing the same thing with ISIS won't make martyrs and raise up an even deadlier terrorist organization?
Oh, Christine's punking. It's the punk pad hour is what it is. Because what she said is absolutely true. And as an aside, let me commend to you, if I may, an absolutely magnificent article in Salon. Our buddy, the Angry Indian, put me onto it. It is probably the best brief as it possibly can be, explanation of how we, you know, where are we going and why are we in this handbasket. It was published on Tuesday this past. We created Islamic extremism. Those blaming Islam for ISIS would have supported Osama bin Laden in the 80s. It is by Ben Norton. And, of course, the lead photograph is an Associated Press photograph by Dennis Cook of greasy-headed old Ronnie Reagan sitting in the White House in front of the fireplace with an Afghan Mujahideen leader. Mm-hmm. And it actually goes back to the 1950s in Afghanistan to explain how they became radicalized and fundamentalized. And here's the surprise. Guess who did that? Shh. We did. And our good friends from the special relationship, the British. No, we really did. Take the time to read this. It's, again, Ben Norton at Salon. It'll grab you. And one of the things, and there's another picture of greasy-headed old Ronnie Reagan meeting with the Mujahideen, 1983. That was when he said, to watch the courageous Afghan freedom fighters battle modern arsenals with simple handheld weapons is an inspiration to those who love freedom. Mommy? Where am I, Mommy? Right. And, of course, those freedom fighters were the precursor of, oh, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, sure. And it explains how it involved leveraging the power and money of our partners in peace, the good headloppers, the Saudis, and the brutal dictators of the UAE and Qatar and places like that. Sure. And how you wind up with attacks in Paris, or 9/11, or Madrid train bombings. And along the way, he mentions, Ben Norton does, the fact that a lot of the stuff that passes for conventional wisdom about the area of Western Asia we call the Middle East is essentially racist in tone and nature. Mm-hmm. Go read it. You'll be glad. What you'll do is you'll bookmark it. I'm not telling you to. I'm just saying I'll bet you do, because you'll want to come back to it. It's loaded with links that back up its assertions. And, you know, you'll probably end up using it if you have... Oh, dang it. You'll probably end up... I think someone's out of the restroom at the back of the plane now. You'll end up using it if you have any interactions with birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, or pig lickens, what have you. You'll end up going back to this to go, no, look, dummy! Because it's pretty much unassailable. He closes by quoting Noam Chomsky, Ben Norton does. Everybody's worried about stopping terrorism. Well, there's a really easy way. Stop participating in it. Ben Norton at Salon. You'll be glad. So back to the punking of Pat, shall we? There's no doubt that ISIS must be stopped, but we went into Iraq with shock and awe and left it a breeding ground for ISIS. How can we know that doing the same with ISIS won't make martyrs and raise up an even deadlier terrorist organization? And by the way, in the Ben Norton article, one of the things he points out, and I don't know how many people know it, this being the extraordinarily intelligent group that it is, and most of you probably do, you know where Hamas came from? Israel supported it because they wanted to get rid of the secular Palestine Liberation Organization. So they gave financial support to a bunch of fundies, and Israel being really good at doing things, they succeeded and they got rid of the PLO, and they got Hamas instead. And Hamas hates Israel even more than the PLO did. Oh, genius! Wile E. Coyote, super genius. I like the sound of that. I see Bibi Netanyahu shaving every morning and seeing all the blood dripping from his hands. Shaving every morning. Why, Bibi Netanyahu, super genius. Right. Okay, back to patois.
Good question.
You know, there's an old saying that used to be quoted, don't strike the king unless you kill him.
Yeah.
And you strike somebody that's powerful, and they'll come back to try to hurt you unless he's put out of the way. We struck Iraq. We struck it wrong. It was incredibly botched. We put a guy named Bremner in there who didn't know what he was doing.
Hey, wait a minute. I seem to recall Marion being all gung-ho for the... For the attack on the people of Iraq. I don't recall any misgivings at all. But now we got it wrong because of Paul Bremer. Isn't that sort of like blaming the offside guard when the quarterback throws an interception right into the arms of a waiting cornerback who has a clear shot for a pick six into the end zone? Isn't that about the same thing? Because, see, Paul Bremer, he was a screw-up. There's no getting around it. But Paul Bremer wasn't running the show. That would have been Dim Leader and Count Dicula. Yeah, oh well. Look. Marion's 80, 90, I don't know, Methuselah. I guess we can't expect him to remember that George W. Bush was president and not Paul Bremer, or that, no.
With ISIS won't make martyrs and raise up an even deadlier terrorist organization. Oh. Good question.
You know, there's an old saying that used to be quoted, don't strike the king unless you kill him.
Yeah.
And you strike somebody as powerful, and they'll come back to try to hurt you unless he's put out of the way. We struck Iraq. We struck it wrong. It was incredibly botched. We put a guy named Bremner in there who didn't know what he was doing. He mishandled the Iraqi army, and you've got the Sunni-Shia conflict going on. I think this ISIS thing is totally different from that, because what's happened is the Sunnis were being oppressed by the Shias, and the Shias were trying to gain ascendancy and so forth. But it's not the same thing exactly.
And the Sunnis oppressed Shias. That's what's sad.
Much better now. P.S., we sold everybody some munitions and whatnot. Yeah. Our good friends from the special relationship, the British, sold the weapons materials to the Saddam Hussein regime back in the 80s for them to use to make the chemical weapons that we knew they were making. But they were going to use it on Iranians, so we said, yay, because we hate them. Oh. And then, of course, the wind shifted, which is one of those problems with chemical weapons and gas-based weapons. The wind shifted, and the Iraqis gassed themselves. So, what are you going to do? Yeah. Now, of course, there's been another so-called terrorist attack. Oh, and speaking of selling arms, also in that Ben Norton article, you will note that we recently sold our partners in peace, the good headloppers, the Saudis, a whole boatload more of bombs for them to use in their alliance with ISIS against people in Yemen, which somehow or another we keep not talking about. Because money. Mm-hmm. But this stuff just goes on and on and, you know, on. Because we are, in fact, such an absolutely loving and classy lot. Holy smokes. Let's check in with Reverend Brother Pastor Minister Presidential Candidate Diabetes Cure-all snake oil salesman, Mike Huckstaby. He was extra lovable because, of course, if there's a problem in the world, we know whose fault it is. Yeah, sure. That one in our White House, of course, right? How could it be anything else? Note coming in from Ray down in Florida. Pass go and collect money, dollar signs. 14 years, thousands of lives, and at least $8 trillion spent in Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda is as big as ever. Our occupation has nothing to do with eliminating terrorism. It's only about feeding military contractors. Well, military contractors need love too, right? Sure. The ding ding a minute ago. Yeah, I got on one message panel, I got Avon calling, and then from Steve in New York, I get the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. We may be hitting some bumpy air. Mm-hmm. Harry. With a trenchant note, not a Syrian refugee, but one from Washington, D.C. I cannot imagine what it must be like to be a native of Syria, having to flee for one's life, and then finding out that people somehow wish you would just go away. But, as a refugee from Washington, D.C., which has truly become a public spectacle of mostly ignorant people aspiring to feel superior to the rest of us, I have come to believe that our country has become one of the cruelest and one of the most arrogant countries in the world. Yes, like most nations, our society has always hated because we fear the other, and it is ironic, or perhaps not, that we have become this inhumane, because we are a nation that is on the decline rather than gaining in political power, economic vitality, or spiritual decency. that perhaps societies in economic and spiritual decline evoke toxic levels of anger and envy in their populace, thus creating an expanding sea of cruelty that few people feel morally confident enough to denounce and build levies to halt. Sure, that big guy, that great big skin-headed dude with the "only God can judge me" tattoo on his arm, and you know, no really definable neck. We'll think of him as Uncle Fester with a beard. My goodness, there's our second Adams Family reference of the evening. That doesn't just happen every night. No. See, he's full of fear because his world is crumbling around him, as Harry alludes. His world is crumbling around him, and he doesn't understand why. But he does have right-wing hate radio to explain to him that it's those people who are the problem, not him, not the fact that he's got him a sixth-grade education and can do his ciphering and his gazettas. It's not him. It's not the fact that he pours hate on his Cheerios in the morning as easily as he does milk. No, it's them people, those people. And for that we have to thank Mark Levin and Flush Flimball and the Hannity Job and the Beckerhead and Savage Wiener and the rest of all Janet Pearsall and Laura Ingram, because this country is bathed. It is awash in hate. Why would we be surprised to find out that this is a hate-filled nation when, like Hamlet's father taking a nap in the garden, there's nothing but poison being poured into people's ears? Right? Yeah, Steve just noted, I just stopped along the New Jersey Turnpike to blast my Lee Green Boogerwood. Better thee than me, Steve. Yeah, Pam Geller, thank you. Thank you, Carol. Because the list just goes on and on and on. So, yeah, there was another vile and horrifying attack today, this one in Mali. The Guardian citing dozens killed. An African jihadi group claiming responsibility for an attack on a hotel in Bamako, Bamako. 170 people were taken hostage. And of course, it was a luxury hotel. It was not the Bamako Super 8. Apparently the attackers, can we say attackers instead of terrorists? Terrorist makes it sound like they've got a bad hobby. The attackers drove into an inner compound of the hotel, detonated grenades, opened fire at security guards, and then took 170 people hostage. There's an American and a Belgian among the dead. Naturally, we have to note that in the report. And 170 people dead, and you know, there's a dead American. So naturally, we should care. I mean, we have to care as long as there's dead. We don't have to care as long as there aren't any dead Americans. Two of the gunmen have been killed. The thing ended by early evening. 30 people escaped. Mali has a UN peacekeeping force of around 12,000 people because of ongoing unrest in that country. Unrest, well, there's another one of those phrases. Because of ongoing horrible violence in that country. And naturally, this paragraph, a military official said the gunman shouted Allahu Akbar as they began the attack. An African jihadi group affiliated with Al-Qaeda called Al-Murabitun is said to be the group that did it. Trouble has been going on in Mali for quite some time. This is, well, this is not as straightforward as I suppose people would like to portray it. This violence has been going on, again, for quite some time. And as Charlie Pierce noted over at his blog at Esquire.com, this one is largely on us. This is of our making. He writes, back in July of 2012, three American commandos died in Mali when their vehicle went off a bridge and into the Niger River. Mm-hmm. So that's been going on a while. The post of that title is, "The Mali Hotel Attack is Not Paris, and That's on Us." He asks as a subhead, "Where is that handy Facebook Activate tool this morning?" There was another hotel on another assault on another hotel in Mali last August. Did you know about it? He says, "I didn't until this morning." 53 UN peacekeepers have died in Mali since 2013. Did you know that? I didn't until this morning. So I'm sure we will have another bedwetting hissy, never for a moment realizing that most of this stuff is stuff that we engender. I haven't seen any avatars on Facebook today with a transparency of the Malian flag overlaying anyone. No. Mm-mm. No. Haven't seen any Mali safety check-ins yet. No. Just like there weren't any in, Kenya. But nonetheless, pastor, brother, governor, presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil salesman, Mike Huckabee, well, he's upset. After today's attack in Mali, the Obama-approved domestic anti-terror plan, give up your guns and memorize a Quran verse.
I'm going to go to, I'm going to go to the fifth book. I think it's referred to as The Palm, and the fifth book, and I think it's the 72nd verse, and when it's rendered out of its original Arabic into English, I think it says, I'm trying to remember here, yeah, because it applies directly to Huckabee. What is it? Oh yeah, here it is.
What are you people on dope?
You dick.
Yeah, that's the verse. That's the verse. The Obama-approved domestic anti-terror plan, give up your guns and memorize a Quran verse.
No, damn it, Mike. You gotta memorize the whole Quran or you're not trying.
But, as Bethania Palma Marcus points out over at Raw Story, the response was swift. One individual tweeting back at him, "You know, it's too bad that ISIS weren't dogs, because then maybe one of your large adult sons could take care of them." Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's worth remembering, of course, Chipotle has this terrible problem with E. coli of late. And it was it was just a few days ago that Huckstraby said that Syrian refugees, what? This is going to take a little work.
Most remarkable thing, you have the left-wing socialist president of France who is closing his borders, and he's sending significant airstrikes and declaring war against ISIS. President Obama is making apologies, and he's closing Gitmo. It is embarrassing. We have a Cub Scout for a commander-in-chief, and I put that on my Facebook page, and I got a lot of pushback from people who said that's an insult to the Cub Scouts. Dana, this is a serious crisis that we're facing, and the crisis is that we have a president who is absolutely amateurs and clueless when it comes to dealing with radical Islam, the fact that this is a fanatical group of people who, based on their irrational religious fanaticism, are ready to kill every last one of us. And this is a president who continues to say we've contained them when we haven't. Hours after he makes that statement, the carnage erupts in Paris. Mm-hmm. What does it take? Everybody seems to get this. Francois Hollande gets this.
Right.
But Barack Obama does not.
And the response of Hollande versus Barack Obama was, as you said, I mean, he's a leftist socialist. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Huh? What is he? He's a left. Barack Obama is a leftist socialist? In what universe? Because it ain't this one. If the man was any more centrist, he'd be a sphere. Meanwhile, Robert Morgantown noting, Mike Huckabee is an insult to God. Well, I wish God would take his insults a little more severely. Greasy spot. Gerald noting, an amateur? Really? How many organized terrorist attacks have happened on his watch? If it's less than one, he's doing a hell of a lot better than Dim Leader did. Well, you know, exactly. But these people are not from the reality-based community now, are they? No.
And while speaking at the G20 summit, he was trying to get everyone to pay attention to this refugee crisis. You know, we must be compassionate. We mustn't let us stop. This is even after we know that two of these terrorists that attacked in Paris were refugees, one of which still had his paperwork from his travel papers issued in Greece. It showed all of his checkpoints. And yet we're still entertaining. And the president's spokesman said today that we're still on track to accept these unvetted migrants. And they said they had a policy in place to protect us, Governor, but I'm not quite sure.
Where does she come up with the idea that the migrants are unvetted? Because they're not.
Sure what that is.
And they don't have any clue what it is. Let me ask this, Dana, and your viewers could probably think about this. When Chipotle had an outbreak of E. coli just recently, what did...
Oh, wait. I misunderstood. Steve's correcting the record there. Francois Hollande is the leftist socialist. I'm so used to them calling Barack Obama that I guess I just sort of knee-jerked and defaulted. We regret the error. What's this? What? Huh?
And they don't have any clue what it is. Let me ask this, Dana, and your viewers could probably think about this. When Chipotle had an outbreak of E. coli just recently, what did they do? They closed all the Chipotle restaurants. I mean, how many gallons of tainted milk do we tolerate before we say take it off the shelves? Here's the point. If we take millions of gallons of tainted milk and we close entire restaurants because a few people get sick, does it make any sense that we would say, well, we're going to bring in tens of thousands of people. We have no idea who they are. We don't know if they're ISIS members who are sneaking in with the real refugees, but we're going to bring them in because we can handle a few people who are going to bring bombs and shoot up a nightclub or shoot up a football stadium of people watching high school kids play.
They're going to bring bombs disguised as what? Three-year-olds or, you know, tucked down in the little pumpkin's ditty? The paranoia of these fools is past the ability of medical science to address it. They're not going to be able to, because I'm not aware of any airlines or even shipping lines that allow you to do it. They're not going to bring AK-47s into the United States. Or even Freedom Protector pistols, and if they're going to get them, they're going to get them here because they're really easy to get. Because, you know, freedom. Wolverines. Yeah. Oh, this stuff just it goes on and on and on. It absolutely does. And honestly, I wish I could tell you, you know, if we would just only do X. Yeah, or Y, I'm open to suggestion. If we would only do that, then we could clear this up. And of course the answer from the Republican right is, well, damn it, if you'll just build a wall that's so tall it reaches into space around Merca and not build any doors in it so nobody gets in and nobody gets out, well, we won't have no problems anymore, you know, except for the problems generated by the people who hold 300 million guns in this country already. And of course the factories that are, you know, you buy all you want, we'll make more. Right. Yeah, tens of thousands, he said. Yeah. And by the way, he's lying again. Of course, you know, he's a fundamentalist Christian, so go figure. Huxterby is lying again, because that whole line about Chipotle closing all their restaurants. Well, they didn't. They didn't. So, okay, it is 2 minutes past the hour, and I am proud to say that we are $120 of the way toward being done with fundraising for the evening. We've got 80 to go, and that includes 6 slots we need to fill in the subscription department, trying to work our way up to the formidable 400, and we've crossed over 50, and we're trying to get to, you know, maybe 75, 100, whatever. But yes, that there's a doubling challenge, a matching challenge out there. Tony and Chico will match your first month's contribution for the first 10 people. We've got 4, we need 6 more. It's Friday on the Front Porch, and time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. That's on the way after a brief break. You know how to jump in, right? Just contact on Skype, contact Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, and you will straightway be connected into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If for some reason or another you cannot negotiate Skype, you're free to use the stress line, area code 304-663-4676. Area code 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Okay? Okay. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Yes, it is. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Seems to go nowhere. me, baby, tainted love. Tainted love. Tainted love. Tainted love.
Tainted milk. Tainted love. You can't keep an old DJ down, you know that? No, you can't. This is the Horn Friday on the front porch, 7 minutes past the hour. Thank you, Carol Baker. Two slots in the subscription challenge just filled up. Need four more. Four more, and that will meet Tony's $100 challenge, which will be awesome. Thank you very kindly, Carol. Hey, it is Friday on the front porch, like I said, and let's run over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, where longtime inveterate, indefatigable, intrepid veteran Horn Molloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky awaits. Hey, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm doing fine. It's only thing I'm battling is the leaves right now. It's been a beautiful day today, 73, but everything's gold now, all the leaves.
You're just now getting color?
No, it's slowly, but the trees out front are all gold. They were red.
Oh, man, that's got to be pretty.
and the leaves are dropping.
The leaves are dropping, which means Sparky's a raking.
Yeah, and a big 100-year oak tree isn't dropping yet, though, out back, as much as it will.
No, that'll all happen at once.
Yeah, those piles are big.
And, you know, I've seen people out raking around here, but we've been having, and you know, you can ask Gerald, or we've been having some pretty airish wind around here. And every time you get a good pile right raked up, poof, and I mean, it's like the scene from, Annie Hall, where Woody Allen sneezes on the big pile of cocaine just everywhere.
Yeah. I've got a MacGyver rake now I made up the other day.
A MacGyver rake?
Well, I call it that because I found when I was cleaning out the ivy on one side of the estate here, I found an old rake that had been laying there, and it just had part of a handle on it. So I pulled it out, and I got the handle off of it, and I started looking at it. And I figured, oh, I'll stick this on a piece of 3/4-inch EMT, which is electrical metal tubing. Well, it's 10 foot long. So you can stand in one place and reach way out and rake leaves towards you.
Nice. Yeah, that's
you can slide it through one hand, pull it through one hand, and it takes getting used to. I wanted to tell people in the Molloy chat, my avatar is an old Air Force patch I had when I was in Okinawa working on the SR-71s. It's an SR-71 off the end of a snake. The head SR-71 is the head of the snake, and the RK stands for Ryukyu Islands.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the disputed islands right about now, aren't they?
Well, they keep wanting all the military bases out of Okinawa, and slowly
He didn't say that. He stopped.
Japanese air defense.
Yeah. You notice Tim's got a hair trigger over there.
They're taking over a lot of the Air Force base there, too.
Good evening, Tim.
Hello.
Hey. How did I know?
Okay, calm down. Stop, Tim.
Yeah. Breathe. Letting go now. Letting go now. I had a note from Robert in Australia. Subject line, kill every one of us? Bob, kill every one of us? I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s with the world poised on the knife edge of nuclear destruction. You know when the USA and the CCCP were more than happy to kill every one of us for an abstract concept? Yeah, that time.
and we got to within 30 minutes of it happening. If not for one Russian officer who refused to accept an alert that indicated that the USA was launching a first strike. It turned out to be a false alarm, but had he launched as he was supposed to, and then simply, Belgium, Bob, Belgium.
You don't like Belgium, though.
Yeah, 30,000 Syrian, 30,000 jihadis are going to kill every one of us. And then we'll all be living in a van down by the river.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
No, we'll probably, Bob, we'll probably go to Tennessee. That's probably where we'll have to go.
Absolutely, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Oh, and Tim, I thought that was a nice observation. No hashtags on Twitter today of pray for Molly. Sorry, no. Molly doesn't count.
No.
I mean, Molly is somewhere in Africa. And most Americans couldn't find Africa on a globe with Africa marked Africa.
Let alone find Molly.
No, it's so not happening.
Africa's a good country, right, Bob?
It's Africa is a really big country, and you know what, Rick? I bless the rains down in Africa. Gonna find some time to do the things I've never done.
Hey, I can see Africa from my front porch, you know, Bob?
Uh-huh. And you know there are great big
Maui.
Yeah, there are great big pyramid shaped granaries there too.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, by the way, Bob, it was 83 degrees today. And Saturday and Sunday, I guess Saturday and Sunday is going to be 84 degrees, and we're on a fire watch.
You know what I've got to say to that, Tim?
Shut it, Tim.
Calliope.
Shut up, Bob.
But you want to talk about somebody having fun in the sun. Now, we're around the halfway mark of autumn right now. I was checking in with John Fox, and I also got a note from Robert in Australia. Yesterday's high in Sydney. Anybody want to guess?
90.
109 in mid-spring. Ooh. In mid-spring in Sydney.
Wow! Holy smokes!
No, well played, well played, Rick. Well played. Yeah, 109 in mid-spring, because, you know, that climate change, it's a big sham.
Yeah. But, starting Wednesday, we're going to drop down to 57 degrees.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah.
God, people in L.A. will have their anoraks and mucklucks and parkas out, won't they?
And toques.
Pretty much. Yeah, their furs, you know. Fake furs, actually, here.
We got a winter storm coming in Tuesday from the Gulf of Alaska.
Well, get this. I just got a note from Carol. You remember Barbie? Hi, Barbie. Barbie is getting 10 inches of snow as we speak, Carol informs me.
Barbie, want some of our heat? You could take it.
Yeah, and I get to go back to that for Christmas. I'm going back to the Midwest, Chicago and Iowa, in December. That'll be fun.
Well, here's a fun one to consider. I don't know. I haven't gotten enough details to be able to say yay or nay, but I got an invitation a couple of days ago to participate in Radio Rose in both Iowa and New Hampshire at caucus and primary time. Now, that'll be like February 1st and February 9th. You want to talk about some lovely weather?
Well, it probably isn't any worse than West Virginia, Bob.
Oh, yes, it is. New Hampshire's a lot norther.
Well, New Hampshire is, but maybe not Iowa.
Oh, the hot. It gets bad out in the plains there.
Yeah, it does. It gets cold and dry that time of year. And sometimes they get snows as well, so... I think you should go, though, Bob. That'd be a lot of fun, except for the weather, of course.
Well, it would probably turn out to be a monumental fundraiser to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I went to tech school in Southern Illinois, and that was the worst winter I've ever had in my life.
Southern Illinois, that's nothing compared to Northern Illinois, Chicago.
Was that down around Carbondale?
Well, not a middle of, is Rantoul. It's near Champlain.
I've been there.
Yeah, that's fairly central, actually, I think, central Illinois.
Hate it.
Gets cold there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, all throughout the Midwest, it can get cold, you know?
Yeah, well, they issued us Mickey Mouse boots back there to march to school in when it snowed. That was fun.
Marching in snow? Yes.
Yeah.
You didn't join the Air Force to march anywhere. It's not, let alone snow, damn it.
Well, we marched everywhere in tech school. You didn't quit marching until you got out of tech school and got to your base. And then you had to just walk to work all the time, walk out to the airplanes on the flight line with a toolbox. Or you got to ride in the truck.
And smoke weed.
Well, that was in Thailand.
Oh, okay.
Everybody was smoking weed in Thailand.
Even the generals.
Lucky the B-52s could get off the ground.
Well, they said the gunners used to get way stoned. Because they were scared shitless when they went over Hanoi.
And they smoked weed while they were paranoid?
Well, they were all alone. They sit in the tail of the D model B-52.
Yeah.
Later models of the B-52, the gunners sat in the front with everybody else. They were all alone.
Yeah, but you're paranoid being there alone, and then you start getting stoned, you get even more paranoid.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I'm just going on what the gun shop guys told me when they go into the cockpit of the gun area after a flight or something, or before a flight.
Surprised me, won the war.
All right, now turn off your smartass hat. Well, speaking of things military, you know the story about Donald Trump saying, you know, T-Rump saying that maybe we're going to need to have a database and give all the Muslims badges to wear?
Yeah, I was thinking what kind of badge we'd wear.
Well, so there's a fella by the name of Sergeant Taib Rashid. He's a veteran of the Marine Corps. And he tweeted, "Hey, at real Donald Trump, I'm an American Muslim and I already carry a special ID badge. Where's yours?" And posted a picture of his Marine ID. Zing. And I didn't realize this, but T-Rump is a four deaf draft deferrer.
Yeah, but I don't think he pooped his pants and did all that shit.
No, he didn't go full Nugent. I mean, his dad was a multimillionaire. He just got four deferments while he was in college, and then once he graduated, they declared him medically unfit. How do you run for president after you've been declared medically unfit? Yeah, well, then again, Bishop Willard Romney was protecting Paris from the Viet Cong, so. Yeah.
Oh, there was a bunch of skullduggery back then. His daddy probably paid off the draft board.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that happened. Happened a lot, as a matter of fact, didn't it?
Well, I'm sure with the lottery system. I'm sure some of them got the wrong number. The silver spoon set.
Oh, by the way, go ahead, what?
I know I had the wrong number. That's why I enlisted.
Yeah, the one of those low ones, right?
Yeah. 74.
Ouch. At what point did
What qualified as a high number, Sparky?
Anything over about 160 or 70.
And
I have friends who are twins. Their number was 356. Talk about luck.
Wow. So, no, just a million to one chance of getting called.
Mm-hmm.
Because being of my age, I don't necessarily fully understand how that process worked. They just worked their way up the numbers. Is that what it was?
Yeah. For the specific year that they pulled your number, then they could start drafting people from your lottery. And they just worked their way up the numbers until they got everybody that they wanted out of that one area.
So would you, if you didn't go in that year's lottery, would there be a new lottery the next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all by your birthday.
So you could go from 356 one year to 12 the next.
No, you just had the one lottery.
Oh, okay.
They didn't take you that. You could still be in the if you had a deferment. For some reason, if you still had that low number, you could still be taken once you lost your deferment.
Or four or five in the case of Count Dicula.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I just got my girlfriend pregnant. I have other priorities. Yeah. Oh, one of these days I want to see that man in The Hague.
I'd rather see him in the gallows.
Well, me too, but I don't think you get to say that in America.
Why not? I can say I want every Muslim to carry a badge on their shirt pocket that is similar to the Star of David that the Jews had to wear in Germany, and that can be said right out in front by a presidential contender.
Yeah, but see,
Muslims, why can't I say I want to see Dick Cheney hanging from a gallows?
Yeah, because he's a former vice president. We've got specific laws about that.
Well, I didn't say I was going to put him there or I was going to do it.
Yeah, true enough.
I want to see it.
Or in a grave.
Well, that'd be nice, too.
Yeah. That's legal.
Well, and speaking of which, did you hear this story coming out of Vegas? What's the guy's name? He's got an interesting name. Tyrone Paul Pontheur. Pontheux. I don't know. Maybe the Vegas contingent heard this story. He has been indicted by a federal grand jury, finally.
Oh, that dude.
He's 55 years old. He's been indicted on one count of threatening the life of the president and one count of threatening to assault, kidnap, and murder other unnamed federal officials. Mm-hmm. He's got seven firearms. That's what he had when he was arrested back in June. And it was all over this. This is what he said. And again, I'm merely using the words he used. I don't think we should have an FCC ban on... of course, the FCC doesn't apply to the Internet, but I don't think we should have an FCC ban on legitimate journalistic use of actual words spoken by actual people. Because here's what he wrote. I think we all need to get our guns and shoot all of these out-of-control congressmen and senators. Any survivors, hang them, then try their dead bodies for high treason. Then after they hang in the streets for a week, run them over to the tree chipper to finish the job and use them for fertilizer for all of Monsanto's GMO bullshit. Then feed it to the Monsanto fucktards and do the process over and over and over again until they all get fucking regurgitated by this fucktard earth of ours, Fuck everyone who sits on their fucking asses and do nothing about our present situation. Fuck America in the ass. Who has the nuts with me to start WW3 right here in Vegas and let it pour all over this fucking globe of ours?
Run on.
My God, sounds like a Republican.
Ooh, sign me up.
Yeah.
By the way, tonight I'm playing the ISIS horn drinking game. And for those of you playing at home, your words are ISIS, terrorist, bomb, Syrian, refugee, kill, jihad, Paris, or Muslim. And so far, you guys are making it really tough. I'm telling you.
Are you too painfully sober, or are you about half wasted?
We're working on it.
What's our poison of choice tonight in this lovely game?
I've been waiting for this in the obligatory Star Trek reference. I don't know. It's green.
Ooh, you have been waiting on it. It sounds like that might be your Romulan ale there.
Well, if you drink enough absinthe, you'll abstain.
Well, that's not what it is. Anyway.
Oh, are you doing solidarity with Tim and drinking Midori melon liqueur? It's green.
Yeah.
I've got cinnamon schnapps. It's actually the fire water, 100 proof.
Ooh, that's a headache. That's a screaming headache in a bottle. Hey, Tim, wait a minute. Wait, what gives? Why did you make the noise when I said Midori?
I don't like that stuff, Midori. It's too sweet. It's yucky. That Midori lemon ball? Ugh.
Better be careful. They're going to pull your card.
I know. I don't like sashimi either.
You better be careful. They're going to make you an honorary redneck.
They got some good food, too, by the way. Ooh, I got some break.
Hey, there is an upside to all of this refugee hate. On social media, it's made it extremely easy for me to weed out those people which I do not wish to associate with. I mean, it's better than the rebel flag, honestly.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although they can't, you know, they can't put the. I mean, it was nice when they were putting the rebel flag up as you know, the devil's diaper. It was nice when they were putting that up as the habit, because it's like ding.
I'm just looking for right-wing news sites to troll.
What do you do, go to the comments or something?
Well, of course.
You are a glutton.
Well, I don't use my real name. That's the beauty of the internet. There's a certain amount of anonymity to it.
I bet you're Zombie Reagan, aren't you? I think I've seen you out there somewhere.
Trump for Prez. I could have several of them.
I was just checking.
It's a bit Irish tonight.
It is a mite Irish, and I'm surprised that I'm not breathing coal smoke yet.
It's 37 here. What is it in the NRV?
I've got, well, let's see. It's a toasty 64 here in the studio, but here on the lip of the NRV, it's a balmy 34.
Oh, it's not too bad.
On our way down to 32.
Well, it is November.
Well, this has been an unseasonably warm November, frankly, has it not?
climate change is a hoax, Bob Kincaid, and you know damn good well it is.
You're damn right I do. What a fraud. The greatest hoax ever perpetrated upon a credulous people.
All of the leading scientists agree that climate change is a hoax. Just like the moon landings and JFK's assassination.
Exactly. I wanted to check in on something because I was going to... I was going to have a look and see what the status of the Don Blankenship trial was. Have you heard anything, Gerald? I heard that Robert told me yesterday that the jury claims to be deadlocked.
Yeah, that's the last I heard. And that Judge Irene Berger, says to keep deliberating. He's going to get off.
But
we knew that, didn't we?
I suspected it. And it's kind of a pity too, and I hate the calculus involved with this, but the reality is if he was to be convicted, you know that Booth Goodwin was going to run for the Democratic nomination for governor here in West Virginia, right?
Right.
Well, you can't do that with a loss or a hung jury.
Right. Then it's going to be hard to beat a billionaire coal operator.
Well, not if he beats himself. I mean, that audio that I played last week of him stumbling drunkenly out of his SUV and upbraiding the cop who, you know, wasn't even being nasty to him and still didn't bust him for, what looked to me like DUI. I don't know. I
don't think it'll hurt him. I really don't.
So you think you think he'll just set to and whip Bill Cole?
Oh no, I don't think he'll whip Bill Cole. I don't think that's going to really hurt him. He's got, you know, hell, he's got the UMWA endorsement. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that used to count for something.
Yeah, it did at one time. I don't know. Of course, you know, my money, my vote's for Jeff Kessler.
Same here.
But I don't think Kessler has the money. I just don't, I mean, I'm going to vote for him, but I just don't think he's going to be able to beat Justice in the primary. And, you know, that's unfortunate because, you know, if there was anyone in this state that was running for governor that actually cared about working class people that, you know, actually really gave a shit, I really truly believe Jeff Kessler is the guy.
I think that's fairly clear. And again, Kessler, you know, Kessler's not he's not necessarily entirely my cup of tea because he will talk a little bit of reality about our situation here.
The problem with Kessler in this state is he's too liberal, and that's, I use that term loosely. Because, you know as well as I do, Bob, I mean, the Democrats we've had in this state are just leftover Dixiecrats. I mean, we haven't had any real Democrats here ever because they can't win. That's part of the problem with this state, in my personal opinion.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, no argument from me.
I just saw your senator down there in Fayette County, Laird.
Yeah, Bill's not a bad guy.
He's not going to seek re-election.
Yeah.
And so far, there's no one is going to run on the Democratic ticket.
Who would run? I mean,
that's true.
I mean, I guess maybe Kelvin Holliday, maybe, but he's happy to be county clerk, and he'll be that as long as he wants to.
Bob Kincaid for state senate.
Yeah, no.
Why not, Bob?
Why?
You're too damn liberal. That's why.
Exactly. And it costs, you know, it costs a gajillion dollars to run for any office now.
Well, I'm sure George Soros would back you. I mean, he gets accused of...
I don't know what I have to do to get on his Christmas card list, but if somebody would just tell me.
That's the go-to line, isn't it? George Soros. That reminds me of one of the Bond movies where the parrot tells where the computer thing got stolen and it got taken to. Remember which one it was now. You probably know which one I'm talking about.
Yes.
They're on the boat, and I don't remember. They're all pretty much the same. But, yeah.
It's
going to be interesting.
You want to know how the new Bond movie ends?
No. I might actually watch it.
He wins.
Did you actually watch it, Duncan?
Yeah. Wasn't a great copy I watched, but I watched it.
Here's a fun thing out of the Blankenship trial. You'll get a kick out of this. So they deliberated for 6.5 hours today. The jury did. And they sent a note to Judge Berger asking her to please give them the definition of the word strive and the word condone.
They don't know what those mean?
No, they don't.
Oh, gosh. Not guilty.
Remember, this is West Virginia you were talking about.
Yeah, but Bob lives there.
Well, that doesn't mean
I can't do it all, Tim.
How many prospective jurors did they go through?
It was a pretty hefty pool.
Yeah, it took them a while. I don't remember how long.
I mean, I think maybe the reason there's 8 women and 4 men, and I think the reason they don't know what the words strive and condone mean is you had to go down to the lowest common denominator. The loopiest meth heads in Mingo, McDowell, and Logan counties. Or maybe the pill people.
Well, it's a shame that he's probably going to get off. And all those 29 lives at Upper Big Branch, their blood is on his hands, in my personal opinion. I mean, from the emails and the notes that I saw that he passed on, the guy was a micromanager, and his utmost priority was to run coal. And, safety be damned. But that's my personal opinion.
Well, I don't think that's your personal opinion, Gerald. I think that's what he wrote in a bunch of memos.
Well, I mean, I feel he's guilty. He's guilty of something. I don't know, some kind of conspiracy or something.
Well, among other things, Blankenship's lawyer is begging for a mistrial. But so far, it looks, as Ken Ward reports, at least 6 jurors are making 2-hour round trips to Charleston for court. Another's making a 3-hour round trip. Taylor argued that such distance, along with the looming Thanksgiving holiday next week, wrongly served to coerce the jury toward making a verdict, whether they agreed on one or not.
Now, the trial's in Beckley, right?
No, it's in Charleston.
Oh, it's in... Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I got a drink. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. So they're traveling from Mingo County to Charleston?
I guess, yeah.
Good God. For $15 a day?
I mean, it's the Southern... When you're in federal court, the jury pool consists of every county in the district.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, see, that's the problem with West Virginia. It may only be 60 miles, but it's a 3-hour drive. That's what a lot of people don't quite understand. That's why you don't get directions in miles here. Well, how far is it to Fairmont? Oh, it's about 2.5 hours. That kind of deal.
Right, because miles are meaningless in the mountains.
That's right. I mean, it's only, okay, here's a good example. I live about 5 miles north of Charleston. And if I want to go to Beckley, I mean, I'm looking at right about an hour. And it's only 58 miles or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's all four-lane highway.
It's a, well, it's a good hour and 20 to, it's a, for me to Charleston, because it's all two-lane road down, down a winding mountain.
Down Golly Mountain, right, yeah.
Yeah. And one speed trap after another.
You're not talking about the good, upstanding officers of Cedar Grove and...
I guess I am.
Well, and Gully Bridge.
I got to tell you, Bob, I was going to wait to jump in, but all the stuff you're telling me about Blankenship and the thing about Donald Trump saying that Muslims or American Muslims and Muslims have to wear badges like the Jude, you know, like Jews had to wear Jude on their shirts and, you know, this... This stuff really turns my stomach. I mean, it really does. And, you know, it just, it's not healthy to be angry as I feel or as frustrated because it's completely reactionary anger. But
what else are you supposed to feel, Larry?
I mean, that guy from Las Vegas got up and said all that crap. And you know, I mean... but
And mostly, you know, I mean, that guy's 55 years old, and he's a he's you know, he's just another John Bircher teabagger loudmouth. But
if I got that angry and said some of that stuff from the left side, they'd haul me off and throw me in jail too. And you know, I mean, I'm just as angry at this Congress for different reasons, and just as frustrated at having to hear all this news stuff. And then I see up here that I think it was Roger that posted this thing that a CNN reporter was suspended for expressing sympathy with refugees, and it's
yeah, so yeah. She tweeted the results of the House of Representatives vote, and in the tweet she said, "The Statue of Liberty hangs her head in anguish." And so she's been suspended for 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, okay, well.
And it's and it's disgusting.
But yesterday I was talking with one of my Native American studies teacher, and we were talking, and she said, well, right now with Bernie, we've got the candidate that's the most left we've had since Eugene Debs. So at least we have some. We're getting a candidate that's that's the most left that we've had since Eugene Debs. I wasn't around when Eugene Debs was around, but I would have been very happy to support him. Okay, that's.
Well, if you want to go back to Blankenship, I really thought if anything was going to hang him, if anything the jury was going to get him on, you know, to make him do that, was when he was complaining about not making enough money or not making as much money. And, you know, and it's the comparison I make with Bill Cole, our one of our Republican candidates for governor here in West Virginia. You know, the guy flies a helicopter all over the state to his meetings. Now, what does that guy have in common with someone like anyone in this group? And that's the point I try to make with people.
Well, exactly. But the best analogy for this is that it's kind of like how the Al Capone was never charged with murder. And
exactly.
Yeah, Blankenship is not being charged with incinerating 29 people past the ability to recognize them as human beings. He's being charged with fudging or ordering the fudging of MSHA safety regulations. And there has been an absolute avalanche of evidence along those lines.
All he cared about was running Co.
Because he was worried about his bonuses and his stock dividends and what his stocks were going to be worth. And, you know, I don't know why. Well, I'm not there, but it just seems to me that it's a pretty well slam dunk case. If you were sitting on the jury, I don't see where there'd be any shadow of a doubt. But that's me. You know, I may be biased. Well, hell, I know I'm biased.
Well, the reason condone and strive are at issue, as Ken Ward reports, is that the words are contained in counts 2 and 3 of the superseding indictment. In those counts, the government alleges Blankenship made a false statement and committed securities fraud because of a statement issued by Massey Energy after the Upper Big Branch mine disaster. And the sentences in question are, we do not condone any violation of MSHA regulations, as well as, we strive to be in compliance with all regulations at all times.
Bullshit. Which is a damn lie.
Well, those are weasel words. We strive.
Well, no, if you strive, then that means you try to comply right with the regulations, and which Massey Energy did not. And only a fool would say otherwise.
The jury has heard things that would absolutely just make me fly into a rage. For instance, yes. they were told about how with Blankenship's monstrous salary, he complained that a bunch of it was in stock options, and he said, you know what, I can't go to the grocery store with stock options.
Says the multimillionaire who right. lives up on the hill by himself with his own private water line.
And probably a wife in a pit or something, or a girlfriend.
This guy is insane.
He's a psychopath.
He's completely fucking insane. Excuse my language. But,
Well, that's what happens when you have power like that. Power and money. For the most part. At least in West Virginia, anyway.
And you know, corporate power in this country, whether or not most corporations don't specifically kill people outright, but they certainly have the same mentality. And we let these companies get away with this. I mean, there's really, I'm not saying anything else. I'm not really saying very much. But, I mean, he's an arrogant son of a fucking bitch. Excuse my language. And he ought to be found guilty. And, he deserves probably worse than jail. And he'll probably get off.
Yeah, he'll get off. But see, Larry, the part that you're probably not aware of is his influence in the political climate. Many years ago. Well, I guess we're about 10 years now. He spent a lot of money to buy him a seat for one of his cronies on the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals. And I can't help but think that was to influence the lawsuit. That was against Massey by, I believe it was Harmon. Was that right, Bob? Harmon? I know you're familiar
with the case. Yeah. You're talking about the Caperton?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, when you can buy state Supreme Court seats for the sake of the kids, we get the government we deserve. And the rest of us have to pay for it.
But corporations for years have hired people and chewed them up and spit them out. And for the democratic socialism side of everything, that's why we have workman's compensation and Social Security disability and other things, is to take care of the people. Not like the Big Branch where 29 of them were dead. You know, that's over and done with. But in the timber industry, people get hurt all the time, and can never work another day in their life. And the company just moves right on, and they foist that cost off onto the general public. And I don't think Blankenship's any different. He's doing the same damn thing. He didn't care whether his employees got black lung disease or not, because it was cheaper for him not to run the air purifiers and all the rest of that kind of stuff. Hey, they get black lung, fine, fuck them. Get, you know, send them down the road. The government will take care of them, not me. And I get to put that money in my pocket.
That's right, Roger. And people don't realize that there's been it's not just limited to that. All the reclamation by the abandoned mines, especially the strip mines or mountaintop removal mines, we the people have paid for all of that. Where these mine operators just walk away, file bankruptcy and walk away from it, to this hellish moonscape they leave, and we the people have to pay for it.
And this is what just frustrates the hell out of me. When I start talking to these Trump, Ben Carson, et cetera, folk that I meet up with virtually every day and say, well, Bernie Sanders is just nothing but a goddamn socialist. And I try to present to them that our government has done socialism for the rich for years and years and years, and maybe it's time for socialism for the poor for a few more years. I mean, hell, FDR did it, and he got reelected, what, three times? Served four terms as president?
Because, I like to counter with that. If you have a Social Security number, then you're a card-carrying socialist.
You're a card-carrying Democratic socialist if you have a Social Security card. You're right.
Well, I mean, and you're also one of those if you're a member of the military.
Well, no. If you're a member of the military, you're even further down the road of socialism. That's not Democratic socialism in the military. That's socialism more to the side of Mussolini and Hitler.
Well, the problem is, as they so well do, changed the narrative and made socialism and liberal bad names, bad words, and people automatically associate them with negative. Socialism is a good thing in limited amounts. You can go on and on about the social things, the social programs in this country that help everyone. Our infrastructure is most of that is socialism.
But you can very inarticulately quote Bernie Sanders, and I'm not quoting him. He does not want the government to own the grocery store down the street. He's not looking for that kind of socialism. What he's looking for, and what I'm looking for, is the workers get to take back the government instead of paying everything to the rich bastards. Let the poor folk have something.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, unfortunately, since the Citizens United decision, until that is changed, I don't see anything turning around.
I'm still working on the exercises to where I can get my head bent over far enough to kiss my ass. I can't quite get there yet. I just haven't done enough exercises because it's about time to say goodbye.
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying it's about time for you to say goodbye?
I'm about time to say society to say goodbye. Bend over, kiss your ass, and say goodbye because it's over. Now, I'm still pushing to change it, but I'm still doing my exercises.
Well, you see, Bob, how it how a lot of us feel in this group. You know, Bob Lottie, and you talk to various other people, and we all talk amongst ourselves, and we all try to work hard to be able to use rational persuasion to get people to see our point of view, and year after year, we just end up getting our clocks cleaned either by the Congress or by the fact that the Democrats aren't willing to fight back hard against the Republicans, or some of the people in this group. There are people in this group that have said, it's beyond the point. We're beyond the point when anything can be done. And when you have
a bunch of apparently they're going after scientists now, and that are saying that climate change is real. And so, you know, that's, I can understand where Roger's coming from. It's just frustrating. Just really frustrating, Bob. It really is.
Oh, yeah, I don't dispute that in the least, Larry. The question is, how does one respond to that frustration?
Well, I think I have an answer, at least what I do. You know, I try to educate. I do my part. You know, I vote, and I campaign for who I think is the better of the candidates. And I'm not, you know, I wouldn't be opposed for campaigning for a, quote, I'm using air quotes here, Republican, if they were, you know, if they weren't insane like all of these Tea Partiers are. The problem I see is all the dirty money in politics. And until that's changed, I don't see anything turning around.
Oh, well, I'm actually looking forward to February 28th, 27th through the 29th, something like that, is the state Democratic convention here in California. And if I get a chance and I see Janice Hahn or John Garamendi on the escalator or down the hall, I am going to give them an earful of selling out to ISIL or whatever name you want to put on those folks for their vote in the House of Representatives last week. And it's going to be a real interesting convention because we tried to nail Jerry Brown on fracking. He has sort of come to see the error of his ways a couple of years ago. And this whole refugee thing, the delegates at the state convention are a hell of a lot more progressive than the leadership. And I think John Burton's going to have a hard time trying to control this year's convention.
You think so?
Yep.
Yes, you know, he tends to, you know, I haven't been to a convention in a very long time. And you're right, the delegates do tend to be more progressive. But, you know, Garamendi is not, I don't know Janice Hahn, but Garamendi tends to be pretty, he tends to go pretty much with the whatever the mainstream opinion is of the moment.
No, I'm not trying to get into the minutia of California politics here. What I'm saying is there is a convention, and I am sure that there will be resolutions on the floor that will be this whole refugee shit is weird. The United States has taken in 2,200, and all of them have had any problems or run-ins with the law at all, and they weren't sabotage, and all these gun nuts that are, oh man, I need to have my guns for the Second Amendment so I can defend myself, are the same people that are going, oh fuck, we can't let these people in here because they might do a terrorist attack. Well then how come you got your goddamn guns? If you're afraid of a terrorist attack, don't be so wishy-washy that you're not going to be out on the street with your freedom protector and protect all of us liberal gun nut, you know, anti-gun nut folk. It's driving me nuts. Anyhow, I would like to shift over to the Gete Okosomenswash.
Oh, yes?
Did you get my email?
No.
Oh, I sent you an email hoping you'd be thinking about that we could discuss using some seeds as part of enticement for being a sustaining member, whatever you want to call it. But I'm also having...
Okay. Apparently, it got bounced into my spam file for some reason. I just found it.
Okay. Well, I'm having a little bit of a problem with the folks in Wisconsin because they're really uptight with the idea of a white boy taking their seeds and making money off of it because they're tired of being ripped off by white folk. So,
which is understandable.
Not, yeah, well, sort of understandable. I've got 4 pounds of seeds I'm sending to them, and there's about 1,500 seeds per pound, so that's about 6,000 seeds I'm sending back to them. And I've only harvested half my seeds so far, so I'm going to have about another 6,000 seeds that I can deal with, but they don't want to sell it through any number, and if anybody ever does sell it, they want only the native community to be able to sell it and all the rest of it. So I know you're not broadcasting next week. I'd like you to think about it a little bit.
Absolutely.
And we can come up with some kind of a number where people who are consistent, sustaining donors, whatever, you know, whatever name you want to put on that, who are interested in some seeds, we can work out the logistics of me putting them in packages and mailing them out, or send them to you and you can put them in packages, but you're probably busier than I am, although I'm busy too, and figure out some kind of a way to where we're not selling the seeds,
right,
but we are giving them away as a bonus kind of thing. And I just like you to give you some thought, let you give some thought to that, and then we can communicate via email and that kind of stuff on how to do it. Now, the other thing on that is there's another issue that's come down, because I was up until this week always of the opinion, and all the stuff on the internet was, that these were found in a clay ball in an archaeological dig. There's another story that comes out that there was a indigenous farmer in that area, and somebody from the seed group was out visiting indigenous people's farms and saw this squash that looked a little strange. They'd never seen it before and asked about it. And the indigenous farmer, an elder person, said, "Oh, no, we've been growing these in our family for years and years and years, and we just save the seed, replant them, and it's a great squash, and that's what we do." And that's how the seeds came into the Native Seed Saver outfit near Green Bay, Wisconsin. So they may or may not have come from a clay ball at an archaeological dig.
Huh.
So,
okay. Well, I mean, the provenance, I mean, as I understood it, the provenance of the seed in this instance came via Winona LaDuke.
Correct. There's no doubt that Winona LaDuke is involved in it. But the question is whether it came from an archaeological dig or one of the Seed Saver Network people going out and visiting, for politically incorrect, somebody from the Seed Saver group going out and visiting old Indians and saying, "What do you got that's traditional to you," as opposed to the archaeological dig. It's a weird, who knows what the real story is at this point to me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know right offhand, but I mean, I can think, and I don't think there would be any complaint about it. I'd love to return some to my good friends on the Bad River Reservation. I think they would be very warmly received up there.
Well, there's about 1,250 seeds per pound.
Yeah.
I could send you 100 seeds, no problem.
Well, yeah.
This is Roger. Am I audible, guys?
You are. Yes. You are, Roger.
Well, real quick, I'm just coming back from my hilltop in northern Wisconsin, not far from the Bad River area, and gosh, 4 or 5 seeds to plant in a mound on top of that hill would be magic.
And, do you garden up there, Roger?
Homecoming. I'm at a truck stop right now. Yes, I do. Yep.
Okay.
I'm getting. At this point, I'm doing a raised bed thing, and four or five seeds. Here's a bid for them.
Well, four seeds provided me with 50 squash. The lightest was like 18 pounds, and the biggest was like 24. And each squash has between 2 and 400 seeds in it. And the vines grow to 25 to 30 feet in a horizontal grow out. So each seed will give you 10 to 12 squash.
Do they like sand?
Beats me. I got good black dirt that I grow in. But these came out of Green Bay, Wisconsin area.
I'm in the Sand Hills area up in northern Wisconsin. I have a feeling they're pretty compatible.
Well, they should be. That they came out of Wisconsin. But nothing's going to be decided tonight. Bob's taking next week off. I'm still harvesting seed, and we'll work at distributing out through this horn group, whatever happens, and blah, blah, blah.
And I take it
because Bob didn't answer my email.
Yeah, and I take it that you've done a germination test.
I'll try it.
Not yet.
So.
Okay.
I'm waiting before I ship him back to Wisconsin to do a germination test, which will happen this next week.
Okay. Betsy wants to get in here with a change the subject.
That's fine. Come on in, Betsy.
I don't actually have a topic to talk about. I wanted to say hello.
Jump in. Yeah, you had something about the refugee issue?
Earlier. When you were, I don't even remember what it was that you were saying about the refugees, but the kids at my school, in the ESL program, approximately 2/3 of the kids are refugees, and it's not something we regularly talk about. They know that there are counselors who come to work for the kids whose countries have war, but they don't really know much else, and we don't really use the word refugees. And today they started asking. Some of the other kids started asking. And it was really interesting because one boy who was in eighth grade asked me why Texas wants to close the door to refugees from Syria. My response was that people are afraid. And he said, what are they afraid of? And I said, well, they're afraid that the people are going to be terrorists, even though the chances are that they're not. And he named his friend, who's also an eighth grader. He says he's a refugee. He's not, right? And I'm like, well, he is. And he says, but he's not scary. He just likes to play and laugh. Like, he doesn't, why would you think he's scary? I was like, well, can I bring you to the Capitol, please?
Yeah, no kidding. Of course, they don't. But then again, the bigots, all they're looking for is confirmation bias. They don't want to hear it because, see, that's the thing. You can have a million peace loving refugees, and they fall right back to that Condoleezza Rice business of, you know, we have to be right all the time. They only have to get it right once.
Yeah.
Did you catch the Indiana refugee story, Bob?
Yeah, that's pretty sickening. Mike Pence?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He kicked some refugees out, and they ended up in Connecticut. Connecticut says, sure, we'll take them.
Oh, I think Governor Malloy had a press conference with the refugees, I think, that the Indiana governor had kicked out. Is that it?
Something like that. It was on CNN. Yeah. Chris Cuomo had an interview with Pence, and he tried to ask Pence, why he kicked those people out, those individual people out, and he just went this roundabout long spiel of talking points. And
he probably should have said, well, because I'm a member of the Pants Wedding Party, and you know, we're just afraid of everything, you know.
Well, here's another good example of that. The governor of Michigan, of course, is one of the people who started this hysteria. His name's Rick Snyder, and he was interviewed, and he was asked, well, you know, what is it that any of them have done that you're afraid of? And here's the NPR clip.
An extremist group linked to Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for today's attack on a hotel.
The country, you're not checked.
What concern?
Within the EU, and it's not just an island of the far right anymore.
Is in an unusual situation. He is Republican. Many leaders in his party have made incendiary remarks about illegal immigrants and Muslims, yet Snyder told us he does not speak for his party. He says he is pro-immigrant. His state has a notable Arab-American population. And before the Paris attacks, Snyder was actually proposing that Michigan accept more refugees. In our talk, you hear a governor raising concerns about Syrian refugees while trying not to go too far.
We've always been good about having people come to our country to rebuild their lives. So in a general sense, I've been very much in favor of refugees across the world. The issue that I said we should hit the pause button for is these horrific terrorist events that have sort of coincided. We have Paris in particular, but also the suicide bombings in Lebanon. You know, 43 people died there, and then the Egyptian airline bombing. I think it would be great if we had more transparency and awareness of the review processes to let in people coming here for the American dream in a positive way.
What concerns you, if anything, about the security check that is currently in place that takes almost 2 years in many cases, that involves the National Counterterrorism Center and other agencies?
Well, I wouldn't single out any specific problem I have with it, but when you have these events, doesn't it make sense you should pause and simply say, let's continue looking at these events? And I really want the federal government to come back and say, you know, we have now made a review of these at least three situations and believe their current system is acceptable or not, or that they're making some modifications.
What a load of crap.
Load of crap is what I want, yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay, so he is in essence saying, I can't tell you that there's anything wrong with the process we have, but I want us to wet our pants some more over these attacks. And even though there's no connection between anybody who wants to come to the United States, and I just don't wanna.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, the process already takes 18 to 24 months. What, you want to double the time that it takes? You want to make it, you know, 36 to 72 months?
No, he wants it to be forever, Rick. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I have a question about that.
See?
What is not transparent about the vetting process? Is it some secret document that we're not allowed to see?
No, it's very transparent. And if Otto Frank had been granted asylum into the United States, which he applied for, Anne Frank would probably be a 77-year-old woman living somewhere around Boston or someplace like that. But we denied Otto Frank asylum in the United States, along with that ship that tried to land in Florida that had 900 people on it. We sent it back to Europe, and 254 of them died in the gas chambers. This is the same thing. Exactly the same thing. Yeah, we've got the school teachers, the mechanics, the shopkeepers, all these people that are trying to flee certain death if they stay there, or at least a good portion of them. And the 2,200 refugees that we've accepted into this country, I believe two of them have been on the other side of the law, and it wasn't for terrorism that they were on the other side of the law with. The system we have in place is doing a fantastic job of not allowing an extremist in. These assholes that pulled off Paris, they could have used their European Union passports, come into the United States without a visa, yeah, flown into Texas, bought whatever weapons they wanted, gotten a rented car, and driven to D.C. or New York or San Francisco and done the exact same thing they did in Paris. It has nothing to do with refugees.
Well, and arguably, maybe some have. I mean, there's 330 million people. The possibility exists, but it is not related to the refugee crisis. You're absolutely right. The people who are fleeing are the people who have some degree of means to flee. I mean, we're talking about people with skills. We're talking about people who could meaningfully and viably and validly and valuably contribute to society.
Doctors, lawyers, shopkeepers, those kinds of folks are the ones that are fleeing.
What are you saying, Beth?
Can I talk, please? I hate this.
Go.
I do. So the refugees who are going to Europe, who are taking the land route, had enough money to flee. Most of the ones who would be coming to us are not the ones who are in now. They are the ones who haven't been able to leave Syria or who left Syria and are sitting in a refugee camp somewhere. It's a different group. It's not the shopkeepers. It's the poor people. We had a briefing from the State Department that we watched online. I want to say 3 weeks ago.
But that doesn't change much, does it? I mean, there's no more. Okay, go ahead.
No, I think we should definitely still take them. There, what I'm saying is the group, in many ways, the people who are making it to Europe. Many of them are becoming safe. Many of them are finding safety, even if they're sleeping on cardboard boxes, which is scary enough. The ones who would be coming here are the ones who haven't managed to get there, who don't have the money to buy their ticket onto the rubber boat.
The ones who've been sitting in the giant refugee camps in Jordan for years.
Yep.
I'm going to ask a stupid question. Probably it's a stupid question, but why do they have to have a vetting process in the first place for some refugees who are so poor and are
because of the definition of refugee. The definition of refugee, as far as international concerns, is recognized by the United Nations. And in order to get that status, which pays for resettlement and pays for the flight out and all of the things, there has to be a vetting process. The reason that you're hearing that in Europe they're using the word migrant often is because a lot of the people getting to Europe certainly would qualify for refugee status, but may not have gone through the process yet.
Yeah, it's basically a formalized designation that the UN has basically helped to create, for humanitarian purposes, and that's why you have the UN High Commissioner for Refugees and so forth as an established office. I was going to draw a parallel between the whole hysteria over the Syrian refugees being admitted to the U.S. and the whole Ebola crisis. Yeah, do you remember that?
I do.
I mean, everybody, like, that was a major threat to the country, and everybody was going to get Ebola, and, when that one person in Texas got it, Congress was all over the place blaming Obama, and, that's just typical Republican spin. They'll blame whatever they can on the party in power, in this case, Obama. That turned out to be much ado about nothing, really, the Ebola thing. I mean, that was fairly well contained pretty damn quickly, by the U.S. health authorities. So, I mean, that's the problem with fear. It's irrational. And, it just kind of has a momentum of its own. And it's difficult to, you just kind of have to let it peter out, you know?
Well, the other side of it is I'm old enough to remember, number one, when Fidel Castro took over, we took in all kinds of people from Cuba, and nobody was really worried about the refugees from Cuba being communists. And then we had the whole Vietnam Indochina war number, and we relocated a whole lot of Cambodians and Vietnamese and Thai and, you know, all that. And the people that really got upset were, well, they're going to come and take our jobs away from us. And but everybody loved to go eat in the Chinese restaurant that was opened up by a Cambodian refugee. And we haven't had any being run over by communism from those folks or the communists from Cuba. And I am simply not worried about the people doing refugee status becoming an ISS cell here in the United States, because it's so much easier to not be a refugee and come in as a tourist.
You know, yeah,
come on, give me a break.
The 9/11 hijackers came in on the student visas.
Yeah. And I mean, why would the people that they've been trying to kill be? I mean, this is the essence of the nonsensical nature of it. Why would the people they've been trying to kill suddenly decide to side with the people who've been trying to kill them?
Well, there's an easy answer for that, Bob.
Racism.
Yeah, facts don't matter, and aren't they all the same?
And beyond that, I'll tell you. Look, I think back to the Boston bombing, the Tsarnaev brothers. You know what radicalized the Tsarnaev brothers? ISIS didn't radicalize the Tsarnaev brothers. Al Qaeda didn't radicalize the Tsarnaev brothers. The Taliban, what have you. Daesh, none of that radicalized the Tsarnaev brothers. What radicalized the Tsarnaev brothers was what they saw in this country and the monumental degree of hateful paranoia that just rolls over this country and what this country does to innocents over there. How is a person with a functioning moral center supposed to feel when he sees people from his ethnic subgroup killed to the tune of a million people? What kind of impact does that have on the psyche of a child? Do you think there might be any value in analyzing that?
I understand, yes.
I mean, one of the things that I fear, and it's not for our country, it's not for the United States, one of the things I fear is for the refugees who come here. The refugees who go to Germany and France and other fairly enlightened, developed nations are going to have a far better chance than the refugees who come to the United States, because they are going to be met at every, this is not to say Europe doesn't have it too, but they don't have it to this degree, because they're going to be met as often as not by bigotry and racism, because it's baked in this country. It is really who we are. I mean, I wish I could be all Pollyanna and say that, you know, everything is Aunt B making pies on Sunday, but it isn't. I mean, it's like a thing Agnes showed me the other day. It was a Sikh on Facebook saying, "We're sick of being targeted by your bigotry and racism. We're Sikhs. We're the 7-Eleven guys, not the 9-Eleven guys."
Yeah,
that's a good bumper sticker there for a Sikh.
A story to go with that, Bob. When they built the Sikh temple in Anderson, California, they had a big old construction forklift on the job. Well, somebody went down there while they were building it, Joe rammed the whole forklift into the building and knocked the whole thing down. And they had to start building it over again because they thought it was Muslims. This was several years back. I mean,
right, and the kerfuffle over the 9/11 mosque and the Islamic Center in Tennessee, and now this it jumped up freak out in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
You know, what I was going to say about that Virginia thing is that they're out here. You know, when you go to build something, you sometimes have to have an open meeting to discuss what kind of community socialism you're going to be using to build that damn church. You know what I mean? Like new roads, stoplights.
Yeah. What kind of infrastructure? Sure. Mm-hmm. But when's the last time somebody jumped up and hollered, "I don't care, all Christians are terrorists, and I'll fight you with everything I got"? I mean, even the atheists don't do that. They're like, "Yeah, okay, you know, build another church. Sure, why not? Like we need
it." When I was on Guam in 67, a whole lot of South Vietnamese were being brought to Guam for training. And they were eating in the chow hall and all the rest of that. And the undercurrent amongst the Navy personnel on the Navy base was, "What are these gooks doing here? Any people that look like that, they're all enemies." And yet these were the South Vietnamese allies being brought onto a military base for training. And the people in the military were bad-mouthing them because they were gooks. This country is so screwed up, I can't believe it. Well, I can believe it because I've lived it, but just drives me nuts. And you're right on that atheist thing. Atheists just don't give a shit. Believe what you want. You know, when one person has a sky god and talks to their sky god and an imaginary friend, they put him in the nut house. But when 100 people get together and agree on their sky god, they call it a religion. I don't understand it.
Or a cult.
Well, I mean, I was taught in anthropology class that all religions start out as personal cults or shamanistic cults, and then they climb up through the, and you know, the Roman Catholic Church qualifies as an ecclesiastical cult. Now, that's not with all the negative energy that's and the pejorative connotations that come with the word cult in the common usage. A cult is a thing. It's just a noun. It's a way to describe a group of people, particularly in a belief structure. The Southern Baptist Convention is a cult, and all religions are to one degree or another.
Yeah, I would say all religions are.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. Yeah. By the way, I got to share this with you guys. You're going to love this. I got a note earlier today from our buddy Scott. The subject line was, and this was in the wake of the legislation that passed the House yesterday. Our buddy Scott wrote, "Hey, Bob or Rebob, taking my cue," I love that part, the "Hey, Bob or Rebob," "taking my cue from the clueless, to wit, the half-wits," Scott's a pro, "of the GOP and too many Democrats, I took a little old look-see," little old, see, he's paying attention, we're using little old a lot these days, "at the new passed bill heading toward President not sure's desk. Well, that bill was okay, I guess, as far as it went, but it damn near doesn't went far enough. I revised it a wee bit to make it a bit more inclusive of all the suspicious, undesirable rascals that a true look at history would indicate worthy of exclusion due to a bad past track record. Please find below my copy of the supplemental and improved version. I would submit it to my representative in Kansas for proposal on the House floor, but I've been informed by knowledgeable persons whose judgment has proved reliable in the past that my representative is illiterate.
So maybe you or one of my fellow hornies can assess you their representative to do it instead. Yours truly, our buddy Scott, 114th Congress, first session, H.R. 4038B, revised and supplemental. To require that supplemental certifications and background investigations be completed prior and after the admission of certain aliens as refugees or huddled masses and for other purposes, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled. Section 1, short title, this act may be cited as the Americans for Retroactively Achievable Infinite Defense Act of 2015 or as the AFRAID Act of 2015. And review of refugees to identify security threats to the United States. Background investigation. In addition to the screening conducted by the Secretary of Homeland Security, the Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation shall take all actions necessary to ensure that each covered alien or the descendant of any alien receives a thorough background investigation prior to or long after admission to the country as a refugee or huddled mass member. A covered alien or the descendant of any alien may not be admitted as a refugee to be allowed to remain in the United States as the descendant of a previous immigrant until the Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation certifies to the Secretary of Homeland Security, the Director of National Intelligence, and by each and every of the following freedom-protecting citizen organizations listed below by state. And Scott then exhaustively listed, and I think he maybe got this from the Southern Poverty Law Center, every hate group in the United States. Every right-wing hate group in the United States, and believe you me, there are a lot of them, and then says that each covered alien or descendant of an alien has received a super-duper uber background investigation that is far more than sufficient to determine whether the covered alien or descendant of an alien is a threat, could be a threat under the right circumstances, could be a threat under the wrong circumstances, could be impugned to share genetic material with any family, tribe, clan, folk group, nationality, race, or species ever known to have resorted to fatal intervention in the resolution of familial, tribal, clannish, folk, or national activities that can be in any way, shape, or manner, including while on a euphoriant buzz, can be construed as posing the slightest itsy-bitsy jeopardy to the security of the United States, whether real, imagined, or downright goofy. Certification by unanimous concurrence. A covered alien or descendant of an alien may only be admitted or allowed to remain in the United States after the Secretary of Homeland Security, with unanimous concurrence of the Director of Federal Bureau of Investigation, the DNI, and all of the aforementioned state organizations, certify to the appropriate congressional committees that the covered alien or descendant of an alien is not a threat to the security of the United States to the degree specified in the preceding paragraph. Let's see. Let me run down here. Monthly report. Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security shall submit to the appropriate congressional committees a monthly report on the total number of applications for admission or residential retention of a descendant, and this, that's important, a descendant, of an alien with regard to which a certification under subsection B was made, and the number of covered aliens or descendants of an alien with regard to whom such a certification was not made for the month preceding. Scott has his legalistic gobbledygook down to an absolute science.
I was going to say, Bob, I think by the terms of that law, we all should be excluded.
We all have to leave. That's the whole point.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's see.
Well, I want to know where the funding amendment is.
Well, stand by. Stand by. Or whenever any of the right sort of person with time on their hands and having passed a sobriety test and an illicit substance test, or not if the said case officer chooses to opt out, or in the case of electronic surveillance, if the software is working as it ought to and Java has been deleted and independent of electronic platform. And y'all know who you are and what to do. The report shall include for each covered alien or descendant of an alien with regard to whom a certification was not made, the concurrence or non-concurrence of each person whose concurrence was required by subsection B. This is brilliant. Definitions in this act, okay? Covered alien or descendant of an alien. The term covered alien or descendant of an alien means any alien applying for admission to the United States as a refugee who, A, is a national or resident of Iraq, Syria, or any place where Islam is practiced, has no nationality, and whose last habitual residence was in Iraq or Syria or any place where Islam is practiced. Score, short side, has been present in Iraq or Syria or any place where Islam is practiced at any time before, on or after March 1st, 2011. D, has Irish genetic material traceable back 10 generations, you know, the IRA. E, has Germanic genetic material tracing back 10 generations, you know, Voldemort. F, has French genetic material traceable back 10 generations, you know, Jacobins. G, has Spanish genetic material traceable back 10 generations, you know, illegals. H, has Portuguese genetic material traceable back 10 generations, you know, Spanish fellow travelers or something. H2, has any Gaelic, Pict, Hun, Celtic, Briton, Biotics, Aquitania, Lugdensis, Belogica, Frisii, Rugli, Gepetti, Marcomanni, Chatti, Dastardanian, Burgundiones, Sarmatian, Germanian, Gutones, Terraconensis, Cherusci, Vandali, Gauls, Goths, Alan, Dacian, Thracian, Numidian, Mauritanian, Cyrenaician, Carthaginian, Aegyptus, Ludian, Phrygian, Moesian, Panoprian, you know, just to cover the historical basis. I has Italian genetic material traceable back 10 generations, you know, the Mafia. J has Scandinavian genetic material traceable back 50 generations, you know, axe-wielding Vikings. K has any Slavic genetic material traceable back 50 generations, you know, they've never accomplished enough and they're prone to commie thoughts. L has any African genetic material traceable back 5,000 generations, you know, gasp, Africa. That would knock me. Oh, my God. I was choking right reading this earlier today. L has any African M has any South Asian genetic material traceable back 500 generations, you know, strange satanic practices like yoga. N has any Chinese genetic material traceable back 500 generations, you know, they're just aching to take over. O has any Japanese genetic material traceable back 100 generations, you know, Pearl Harbor. P has any Korean genetic material traceable back 100 generations, you know, anyone located between China and Japan just has to be contaminated with nasty thoughts. Q has any Polynesian genetic material traceable back 100 generations, you know, they infiltrate by radar-proof low-slung outrigger canoe. R has any other Asian or European genetic material traceable back 100 generations, you know, just to be on the safe side. T has any Aussie Aboriginal genetic material traceable back 1,004 generations, as you know, they ought to be happy in the outback. U has any Native American genetic material traceable back 10,000 generations, you know, little bighorn, and there's lots of space in East Siberia. V has any genetic material, including mammalian, avian, reptilian, insect, piscine, bacterial, or viral, indicative of a predatory nature. Only those certifiable as genetic herbivores or plants, including lichens, some molds, slime molds, and some fungi, some amoebas, most chromista, most protozoa, shall be allowed to stay. All carnivores and omnivores of whatever placement on the Linnaean classification scheme or its successors are herewith to be considered as an actual or potential threat to these United States and shall be given a cursory review prior to automatic expulsion. And then there, and then there's the committee references.
Oh, jeez.
Let's see. The Pat Boone Thursday Morning Glee Club gets a reference. The Benghazi Omnibus Committee, the Prophecy Committee of the House of Representing, the Senate Conspiracy Committee, the Redundant Committee 1, the Redundant Committee 2, the Rubber Stamp Committee, the Bicameral Jerry Sandusky Defense Fund Committee, the This, That, and the Other Committee, the Revolving Door Halfway House Committee, the Highfalutin Committee, the Koch Brothers Steered Committee, the Redundant Committee 3, the One Percenters Liaison Committee, the Bill Graveyard Committee, the Anti-Melatonin Committee, the Faith-Based Legislation Committee, and the Patriotic Committee for Patriotic Patriots of American Patriotic Patriotism.
They just showed how ridiculous we are. How ridiculous we...
Is that one of our listeners, Bob? Scott?
Yeah, that's our buddy Scott in Sweden.
He must have a lot of time on his hands to be able to do that.
No,
I'm wondering why he doesn't say good morning to me anymore.
He's been too busy.
that was just. I've gotten a lot of brilliant stuff from Scott over the years. I think he just reached the pinnacle with that.
Well, he sometimes comes on Skype and says good morning to me when he's going to bed. Because I'm just getting up. He sees me pop up online, you know, the Skype notification. And he'll message me sometimes with brilliant stuff.
And Scott is the one, of course, Rick, who provided us with the with all of our new bumper stickers and the postage with which to send them out to everybody who signs up for a subscription. And I'm proud to announce our buddy... Our buddy Harold has just taken up three slots in the subscription drive. And so we have one more subscription to go to meet Tony's challenge. And $30 to go to finish off this evening's fundraising, which is just awesome. And I agree, Jack has now nominated Scott for a toaster for the evening. Absolutely, Jack, you're so right.
I think he needs a double toaster if you have any, Bob. And
oh, yeah, this was, yeah, with bagel and wide slice slots and the pull-out crumb pan. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Preferably in chrome. Version.
Send him some Gravlax.
Ooh, Gravlax. Mmm, yum.
Gravlax bagels.
No, but see, Scott lives in, Larry Scott lives in Sweden, where he can get, and I always have, Zerstroming, which is the, oh my God, I still remember, years ago, he sent us a can. We had to open it out about 200 feet from the house. And cats started yowling 2 miles away.
Oh boy!
Yeah, it's sort of a deliberately rotten fish.
Oh.
It makes Norwegian lutefisk look like cheesecake.
Oh.
It makes zombie flesh smell appealing.
Estroming? Estrom?
Zerstroming, Surstromming.
Oh, okay.
You would be, let's put it this way, Larry, if you were to open a can in your apartment, you would be evicted from the entire Bay Area.
God.
You want to defeat ISIS? Drop Zerstroming on them.
Oh, yeah, but can you cook it on a coal fire?
No, it's just no. It's the ultimate hillbilly food. It's just like it's just like pork and beans and Vienna sausage. You can eat it straight out in the can,
or the sardines in the mustard sauce.
There you go.
Oh God!
Them little tiny rubbery smoked oysters. Yum yum.
There's enough sodium in one can for three families.
So if it's that rotten, do they eat that?
Oh yes. It's a delicacy.
Oh, okay.
So, Bob, I was going to see if we could shift a little bit. Does anybody want to hear a concert report?
Oh, do please.
Okay. So, Friday night I went to this, I went to see Collective Soul at the Wiltern Theater. It's a, it's like a Art Deco theater, probably built in like the 20s or 30s in mid-city LA. A beautiful venue for a concert, and, they were wonderful. It took us about an hour. The show was to have started like at, doors would open like at 7. They actually didn't open until like 8:15. I think because of the enhanced security, because that was just, you know, just earlier in the day, there had been that terrorist attack in Paris, or attacks. But, yeah, I mean, Collective Soul, they're just, they were wonderful. I mean, the lead vocalist, Ed Roland, who founded the band, you know, just tremendous. The voice, the sound. It was kind of funny though. The warm up band. I thought it was Collective Soul because I didn't know there'd be a warm up band. Okay, so I was like listening to this band like for the they were okay. It's like, wait a second, I'm not hearing any familiar songs. What's the problem here? You know, these guys. You know, they say things like, "Oh, you're too kind, Los Angeles." After they were getting tepid applause. And I was like thinking, geez, these guys don't have much of a stage presence. What presence? What's the deal? And they look too young. They're not in their 50s, you know. And so the real band came on, and really, really, really fine show. I went to see it with my son, of course, I'd say the highlight of it was one of the highlights of it was at the beginning when you know, he said it was a sombering day. I don't think that's a word. I think he meant to say somber, but it's been a very sombering day, as you know. And, you know, I'm not going to let these motherfucking terrorists ruin my fun tonight, and we're going to rock out or something like that. But apparently there's two brothers. The Roland brothers are, you know, the founders of the band, and their mom apparently had flown out to be with them, to see them at the show, because I guess they got their start in Los Angeles as a band, but they're from Georgia originally. And so, that was kind of a family reunion of sorts, but he was pissed off that, you know, the terrorists had done that. And and I think after the first few songs, the mood got a lot more lighter, and, we can't really do anything. You know, the only way we can lose to terrorists is to be afraid and to not let us, you know, to restrain what we do and not live our life as we should, you know, and be afraid to go into crowds and interact with people. I mean, then what's the point of having any kind of a open society? You don't at that point, you know. And, that's the thing I don't understand about all this terrorism stuff, that, you know, the reaction to it. That's exactly what they want. They want the government to crack down on the people. They want the government to do mass surveillance and, you know, make things into a police state, because, you know, that's sort of their mentality anyway, you know?
Well, you know what Bernie Ward said? He said people who are going to react this way to the 9/11 thing the terrorists end up winning when we act, you know. And people in America, if they're going to start, you know, passing all these drastic laws and stuff and clamping down, they're Americans that don't deserve America.
Yeah, precisely. And, you just have to look back to the days after 9/11. The USA Patriot Act was passed, I think less than a week after the terror attacks. I mean, they had this thing, you know, the national security apparatus and the FBI and all the law enforcement had this thing drafted way in advance, because they just rolled it out and the legislators didn't read it. You know, nobody paid attention.
Look,
you know,
there are a lot of people. How to put this? Fascism is very easy to live with as long as you keep your head down, don't say anything about government, don't say anything about the wealthy or about the abuses taking place around you. And attempts at personal sovereignty and anything that smacks of actual citizen participation in government is considerably more difficult by comparison. There are a lot of people in this country who are simply authoritarian followers, Rick, and they're more than happy to see this become a clamped-down state.
Oh, that's absolutely true. They want the big, strong daddy as the leader. That's why when a Republican is in office, like George W. Bush, I mean, nobody in the party ever dissented. I mean, they basically, any kind of bill that he wanted, Congress would pass, and, you know, it was no problem, basically. You know, it was ridiculous. I think probably about 30 to maybe 35% of people fall into that camp, the authoritarian personality type, and, you know, they're looking for somebody to follow. They're looking for a strong leader to follow. They don't want to have to think for themselves, or, you know, try to participate in any kind of a civic democratic engagement. They just want to be led.
Exactly.
You know, by a strong guy.
Right. Hey, Betsy, you were going to say something?
Our schools are setting that up. I mean, when I was in Pflugerville, one of the things that I struggled with the most, when I had trouble with the curriculum and the authoritarian nature of a lot of things, but kids were rewarded for straight, quiet lines. They were not rewarded for thinking. They were rewarded for being quiet in the cafeteria. They were setting them up for authoritarianism. You know, I'm somebody, I reward good questions.
And you know,
I had to leave. I mean, that was a big part of me leaving the school.
And I guess there are those who think that if you've just got proles who march when they're told to march and stop when they're told to stop, and that's a much more manageable vision of society.
It's manageable, but that's not education.
No, no, but the people who put that stuff together don't care about education. They care about order, and they care about running. They care about uniformity and sameness and compliance and not challenging authority.
Yeah, not my style.
No, nor I didn't.
So how do we keep them from getting? How do we keep them from getting and maintaining public opinion and
well, they've already got it.
Keeping control.
They've already got it, Larry. Hey, let me check in with Ron real quick. We haven't heard from Ron this evening.
I'm here.
I'm glad. So, just to flesh out something, you're in Ottawa, and you're going to get what? What'd you say? 5,000 Syrian refugees?
Yeah, out of the 25,000 that are going to be here before the end of the year, and none of them were supposed to be here up until the election. Despite the fact that the vetting had been done, the conservatives just were not opening the doors. Now we've got a different government. Most of the front-end legwork has been done. The security concerns are addressed. And right now, we've got churches and groups all over the country figuring out how we can bring these people in and make the transition as smooth as possible.
And make them welcome.
Absolutely, and give them parkets.
Well, they're going to see Canada at its absolute best, aren't they?
Yeah, by next summer, if they're still here, they'll know what they've got to deal with. But they will be welcomed, and we will not serve them any dead, tainted, putrid fish.
That's just because you're not Swedish. But in all seriousness, how is it that Canada is manifesting the American ideal better than the United States is? I mean, you've had a foot in both worlds, Ron. Has the United States just given up?
I think so. The public voices seem to have given up. I'm not sure the average American has. But I think somebody should explore people from coal mining country whose life is clearly and scientifically proven to be in doubt should claim refugee status with Canada and just see what happens.
I think it would be very, very interesting. And maybe throw in the gun thing for good measure.
Like an old mentor of mine once told me, he says, what's the worst that could happen? They say no. Occasionally you lead with your chin. So, and I've enjoyed the conversation tonight. It's been interesting.
You know, I think we've had about three really, really scintillating Friday on the Front Porches in a row, Ron.
Yeah.
I mean, they're always good and they're always fun, but these last three have just absolutely been tremendous. You know, not that we come away from here having solved any major world problems, but because we seem to be able to reach consensus on how we might go about making the attempt.
I would agree. My only suggestion to improve the quantity of discourse is people remember to turn off their feed for the show and their microphone unless they're trying to talk.
That's very helpful.
Well, that's my job.
That's what you get the big moderator bucks for, Sparky.
Hey, do you want to take a few minutes to tell the people what's going to happen next week?
I was thinking exactly that. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky, especially with 4 minutes to go in the program. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. The conversation, like I said, has been scintillating. So there will be no programs from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time next week. Not because I'm taking off to go on a fabulous Thanksgiving vacation or stay here on a fabulous Thanksgiving vacation.
but because I am deeply honored for the opportunity to fill in while Mike and Kathy Malloy and Molly take their Thanksgiving break. It's going to happen. It has been a heroic undertaking to pull together the fundraising for the equipment necessary to do this. We have all of the equipment, and Agnes and I will be spending the weekend doing dry runs and practicing, because it's different between here and there. Over there, as you know, when you listen to Malloy every night, there are breaks to be run, and these things have to be run with a considerable degree of precision. And a lot of things have to happen at one time in order to make the breaks happen. And among other things, you can't just open the mic like I do and start yammering. Things have to have beginnings and endings, so there will be a lot of practice going on. We are both as excited as two human beings possibly can be. This is absolutely thrilling. And just a general reminder, should it happen that you do call in, just a general reminder, you don't get to use the fun words we use here on the horn, okay? We've got a booger machine in place, and if you do, we'll push the button, and you'll disappear. Your call will be disconnected, and we'll just go on as if it had not happened. So just be aware of that if you do call. But I hope you'll be joining in all next week. I'm looking forward to it. I'm thrilled about it. I'm excited about it. I got a big thumbs up from Agnes Viking Warrior Princess back here behind me.
Woot woot!
Yeah, she's... And, cross your fingers and wish me luck. And again, thank you so much to Mike and Kathy for the opportunity to do this. I haven't been so excited about something in a very, very long time, and it'll be an opportunity for us to get to know more of the Truth Seekers, and maybe a chance for the Truth Seekers to better get to know us. So, thank you, and I look forward to your thoughts, emails, tweets, etc. And thanks for a wonderful week. Thank you for meeting Chris in Germany's challenge. Thank you for getting to within $30 of this evening's fundraising goal. And thank you for getting to within $10 of Tony in Chico's subscription challenge. That's all amazing to me. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the formerly Horn chat room, which we hope to fix. Thanks to Greg for letting us come over and borrow a cup of chat room at the Malloy chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend. See you 9 p.m. Monday. Bye, y'all.